more for Guyver Dark Hero. That one was all...
Guyver Dark Hero. A movie that nobody heard of, so we're going to make a sequel.
And then Drive was the very... And then Drive was his next picture.
His best one was Titanic.
You may have caught him at his creative apex.
Because he had the spirit, and he was the Phantom. Terrible.
Yeah. Titanic?
Yeah, I didn't see that.
The Shadow?
Yeah, he was all dark things.
Wow.
Except for Liam Neeson took one of those from
reject
him.
Reject action heroes.
Yeah.
Wait, oh, just Billy Zane? Sorry, I was just throwing him out there. He was not the spirit.
No, you're right, he was the Phantom. Who was the spirit?
The dude from Suits.
Oh my god.
I don't even
never
know what you're talking about.
Gabriel, or...
Yeah, him.
Gabriel Union. Gabriel Union.
What a weird show that was.
Gabriel Mocked.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah.
Something Nazi sounding.
Something Nazi sounding. This is great. Oh, Stanley Tucci co-directed The Big Night, too, and co-wrote it.
Yeah, you're not winning me over.
It's good. I liked it. It wasn't like a, you know, a big feel movie. It was just like a nice little slice of moments.
You know what I liked with Stanley Tucci? There was there was a Netflix show where he was like, he was on death row for killing his wife.
Oh, yeah. I watched a few episodes of that, and then I don't know, haven't had Netflix, so.
Ian Holm plays an Italian guy in it, too.
Is that...
From
Game of Thrones?
He was in Game of Thrones, I believe. He was also in Fifth Element. He was in...
I think I may have had a Eternal Sunshine procedure performed where I don't remember that movie anymore.
The Fifth Element?
Yeah. Because...
What?
I hate it so much.
I'm
left with the memory of hating it without any... Purged...
Is it because of Chris Tucker? Because
Chris Tucker was great in that.
Yeah.
Chris Tucker,
yeah.
That was his breakout.
Yeah. Everybody was great in
maybe
that movie. It's got Tiny Lister in it.
Yeah, okay. So did No Holds Barred.
Like President of the Galaxy or something.
Yeah, President of the Galaxy.
I don't remember who it was, because I asked... Before the election, I was like, you know, I asked Facebook,
who's also
I was like,
an alien.
Who's your favorite fictional president? And somebody said, yeah.
Which is, he's a terrible president.
What sucks is he wasn't a real president. And now we'll never know.
Now we'll never
know. I would have taken James Avery over him, for the record.
I would have taken...
But only if he just did Shredder voice.
I would have taken President Camacho over
him. Well, you can still... You can still have that.
That's true.
Yeah, but Camacho's at least likable.
We could even have fake President Kevin Kline.
Oh,
there you go.
What was that
Dave.
Movie? Dave. I wanted to say Meet Dave. I'm like, that's
nope,
not
Dave.
It.
Oh, no.
That is definitely not
there were
the
no
answer.
Presidents nor precedents for what? Except
where
for
the hell are my notes?
I didn't have very many.
I took... Well, it's,
well, my I also my
it was my responsibility.
It's an old movie. So. It's pretty straightforward. You've read the book, I assume.
I've read
right?
the book, yeah, way when I was a kid.
The book that is now banned in a bunch of places, apparently.
Of course it is.
Because why not? Because you know this teaches us about how to, you know, not be racist.
I'm surprised they didn't
treat
just,
everyone with respect.
I'm surprised they didn't just tear out the third act
to be less racist. We'll get into that. All right, are we ready?
Sure.
Hey everyone, welcome to Films Like the First Time. I'm Nick.
I'm Amanda.
I'm Dave.
And if you don't know, this is the podcast where every episode we discuss a film that one of us, at least, has not seen before in our lifetime. Generally a well-known film. Not always, but generally. And this week, Amanda picked the film, and she picked a movie that I had not seen. I'd seen snippets of, but I'd never seen the entirety of.
I'm really surprised that you didn't watch this in school after you read the book.
Clips. Just clips, not the whole film. We are discussing To Kill a Mockingbird.
There you go. By Harper Lee.
Yes, the movie based on the Harper Lee book of the same name. This movie starred Gregory Peck as Atticus Finch. And it's in black and white, and it wasn't my choice to pick a black and white film this time, so that's kind of nice.
Haven't we all now?
Well, the two black and whites I have chosen have been actual old movies, too.
Fair enough.
Because I picked It's a Wonderful Life for our first episode.
Fine, I'm going to pick Logan Noir, then.
What did you pick that was black and white already?
I don't know. Now I'm thinking about it.
Maybe I don't know if you have. Nick has had a couple.
Yep, Nebraska, which and is a Doctor new movie. Strangelove, uh-huh. Which also could have been in color. That was done in black and white on purpose. But yeah, so we're talking To Kill a Mockingbird, and if you haven't read the book or seen the movie, either or, I'm a little surprised, then you're probably not an American listener, is my guess. Because at least if you're of a certain age, everyone read the book in school at some
point. This was required reading for, like 95% of school children.
And for good reason. I mean, the book is powerful. I'm not even going to say it's excellent. It's been decades and decades since I've read the book. I was a child, so I can't talk specifically to the quality of the writing, but its impact is massive.
I mean, it's something that makes you think about stuff. It's a lot of kids' first foray into a lot of these themes.
Yes. More themes than I even remember a little bit, and we'll get into that. So we get this opening sequence where we have, I assume it's Scout, but then later we see that the box is actually Gems. So it might be Gem using the box, but coloring and stuff, and there's all the trinkets and things. And I just really liked how they did an etching to do the opening, the title of the movie.
Oh, yeah.
I thought it was just really nice. And then we kind of get into this typical small town opening monologue from a kid. Right, it makes it start off kind of feeling like, oh, it's summer as a child, you know, the age of innocence kind of a thing.
And this takes place, did they say exactly? I'm assuming it was the 1930s.
It's during the Depression, it seems like, and in Alabama, rural Alabama.
Which I think the Depression there lasted from the 30s until
2026. Yeah. Sorry, Alabama.
I'm not. You can move.
So the first thing we get is Mr. Cunningham bringing hickory nuts for the Finches, and Scout being very vocal, like, no, I'm going to get my dad. And he's like, oh, no, he's probably asleep. Just, it's fine. It's fine. And, you know, Atticus comes out and thanks him for the nuts and everything. And then he has to explain to Scout afterwards that it embarrasses Mr. Cunningham to have to thank him, to be thanked for giving him some nuts, because what's happening is Atticus is working for barter, basically. Mm-hmm. He understands that a lot of people, especially farmers at this time, don't have any money, and so he exchanges his services for goods, or it seems like he even does it for free for a lot of people.
Hey, man, we're going to have to bring back the barter system. I'm just saying.
Yeah.
Like, some people still do it, but, like, I think a lot of us are going to have to bring back the barter system going forward.
But, yeah, then Scout asks Dad, or, well, she didn't say Dad because she never calls him Dad in this movie. She goes, Atticus, are we poor? And he has to basically explain that they are poor, but they're not as poor.
We're not as poor as they are.
Right.
Which, that was one of the weird things to me, this movie. Three things that were brought back, because it's been a long time since I've seen it, is the fact that Scout never calls him Pa or Dad,
neither
or
does
Father.
Gem. We learn that Gem's the reason that she does
it. They call him Atticus. Number two is what the hell a chifarobe is.
I still don't know what a chifarobe is.
I remember
said it like 50,000 times.
Chifarobe, that's like one of the things that always stood out to me, even as a kid.
Oh, no,
I'm like, what's a chifarobe?
I did once know what that was. I think it's furniture.
It's like a wardrobe, I think. But that was one of the things that I was always like, what's a chifarobe? And whatever, what is his name? Gem. Like, because
it's truly outrageous.
Yes.
Because it's the whole, and I'm sure it obviously is obvious in the book because you're reading it, but in the movie, the whole first half of the movie, it sounds like they're calling him Jeb, but then sometimes sounds like they're calling him Jim, and then Gem, and I was never sure what the kid's movie
they don't
name
have teeth.
Was.
Well, Dill has all the teeth.
Dill has all the teeth.
By the way, chifarobe is a closet-like piece of furniture that combines a long space for hanging clothes with a chest of drawers.
Yeah, so it's just a wardrobe.
Yeah. Why didn't they just say wardrobe?
Because
chifarobe's a 1930s Alabama term, I guess.
And also
I don't know.
A way of dicing in the bayou.
Interesting.
I've heard chiffonade.
Oh, yeah. That's...
Yeah, I've heard of chiffon. So as this conversation happens between Scout and Atticus, then we get Brother Jem in the tree because he doesn't want to come down for breakfast. And he won't come down because Atticus won't play football for whoever it was. I can't remember now.
And Atticus is just like whatever local intramural squad or something.
Right.
And Atticus is like, I'm too old. And Jem's like, he's too old for everything. And then he's mad because he even mentions that Atticus won't let him have a gun. I'm like, dude, you're like 7.
He's like 10.
And look how it worked out for Ralphie.
Yeah. And that wasn't even a real gun.
Yeah. Kid was a crack shot, though.
So Atticus is like, fine, whatever. I got to go to fucking work. See ya. Yeah, I'm leaving my kids to run around all day.
Well, they had the nanny type people.
I would call her a maid, I would say.
Well, yeah. What was her name? The black woman.
I know, and I'm terrible.
I can't remember her name. Because they said her name several times. And then there was the white lady that was always around.
That was the neighbor, though. I think that's who Atticus was banging on the side, honestly. You know,
it seemed
It was hard to say. No, because there's a neighbor, there's her aunt.
Yeah, but it's...
There's all these, like, sort of anonymous...
It was parenting by committee, is what it was.
Well, that was back when there was a lot more sense
and
of community.
It was a rural area, and I understand that also helps enhance the idea of safety. But it was just funny.
But maybe have, like, some more distinct characters, because, everybody's just like, okay... Like, what's your qualification? Or, like, basically, what do you bring to this scene?
And I think,
well, I'm white and I'm a woman.
That point goes back to a little bit of what's going to be my main criticism of this film, which I don't have a lot of criticism for this film. Don't think I'm going to shit on it. But there are some things that I am critical of, and I feel like it's the glossing over of details and the kind of, I don't want to say nerfing of the story a little bit. It definitely plays softer and a little vaguer than I remember the book being. But also, like I said, it's been decades since I've read the book.
I feel like, and again, I haven't read the book in a long, but it's not a long book. And this is an over 2-hour movie. So I really think it's pretty accurate.
I know there's at least one scene that stuck with me as a kid when I read the book that watching it in the movie, I'm like, wow, they just kind of just were like, we'll throw this in here. We'll get to that. So then we see a child hiding in the cabbages.
He wasn't hiding very well. He was just squatting in the cabbages.
But it was literally the weirdest thing. Where Cabbage Patch Kid came from?
Maybe. Dill is the original Cabbage Patch.
It makes a lot of sense now that you say it.
But they have this conversation, and Dill's like, I'm from wherever, Mississippi, and I'm here to see my aunt for 2 weeks, and my mom sent me, and I don't know who my dad is. But then, and then Scott's like, well, our mom's dead.
Oh, wait, to go back to your earlier point about not knowing the black woman's name.
Yeah.
When you said Dill, and I'm like, half of the people were calling him Dale, some of them were calling him Dill.
Yeah.
That's hard enough, and that's one syllable. And the black woman's name was like 3. And this garbled language
like
that they speak in this town.
A few different names. Like, they had, like, she had, like, a proper name, then she had, like, a regular name, and then she had even a shorter name.
Yeah. It wasn't Consuela, but it was something that was, like, it started with a C, and I feel like it was, like, Cornelia or, like, something. I can't remember.
Yeah. And then all of a sudden it was, like, Andalusia or some other fucking...
Well, yeah, she had, like, a full-length name.
Yeah, but the two names had no correlation to each other.
Look.
You gotta define your shit.
Yeah.
It's almost...
Or we need to pay better attention.
Actually, you know what it was? It was the same character, but they decided they didn't want to pay more than one black woman. So they gave all the lines to the same actor and then never changed the name later on.
So, yeah.
You talk about lazy, Nick? That's what I say.
I think there were some lazy things in this film. But also, we're just going to keep moving on. We're looming about the neighborhood, and Mr. Radley walks by, and I think it was Jem that said, there goes the meanest man that ever took a breath alive. And then
what a great line.
It was a great... There were some really great lines in this movie. Yeah. And that was one of them. And they talk about his son Boo and, you know, him trying to kill him. And, you know, he keeps his son Boo chained to a bed. They say that he eats raw squirrels. Jeez. They're really setting up this Boo Radley legend very well. And Dill, like, during this whole, like, scene, Dill's like, why do you call your daddy Atticus? And Scott's just like, because Jem does. I'm like, okay. And that was basically all the explanation we ever get on why they call him Atticus.
Yeah, and Atticus doesn't seem to have any opinions on the fact that his kids call him Atticus.
So that's my other criticism of this movie. To be fair,
Scott does call him Sir occasionally.
Gregory Peck won Best Actor for this movie.
Oh, we're going to get to the Academy more later.
Yeah, but and this is one of my criticisms. I think, I'm not saying his acting was bad in this movie, but it was very stoic. And I think it may have been overly stoic for the role of Atticus Finch.
Maybe. But, I mean, you are talking about a guy who's... He's obviously a widower.
Yes.
And in that era, doesn't show emotion.
Yeah, this was the 1930s.
I get that. I'm not saying that that Atticus isn't a stoic
figure.
And also,
he's probably dead inside. He doesn't.
I don't think he's dead inside, though. I don't think he should be.
At least that's how it comes across.
He cares deeply about his children. He just doesn't... Like, when they say things that should impact him more, I want to see it a little bit more, even if he doesn't externalize it.
Well, to be fair, he treats them... It's almost like a oddly placed mutual respect, where he sort of talks to them as equals as well, but they understand the pecking order.
Well,
the Gregory pecking
order. Well, this is the thing. I like the character of Atticus Finch in the sense that his parenting strategy is parenting through a longing of exploration, right? He allows his kids to be curious. He allows them to try things and make mistakes and be human and kind of go off on their own a little too much sometimes, but like to explore, right? And I think that's great for him as a father. But a lot of times in Peck's performance, I don't think we see the parts that actually impact him enough. And so that's kind of where I'm at with that. And especially when they talk about, like, the mom later. And we're going to get to that scene.
Well, that is also a product of its time. Like, we are so soft now and emotional because we're allowed to be. Whereas this took place in a time where death and all of these things, that was just regular part of life. Everyone experienced it, and it wasn't...
But it still impacts you as a human.
It's going to impact you, but it's also, like I said, so much more of a regular part of life that they're just a lot more desensitized to it than we would be now.
Yeah. So then we get Atticus coming home, and as he's coming home, they're going by the one old widow's, like she was like a Confederate war widow or something, porch, and Jem tells Dill, like, hey, don't even talk to her. Don't answer anything. And immediately Scout is like, hey, Mrs. Whatever her name was. Mm-hmm. And she's like, don't say hey to me. You say good evening or whatever it is.
Good afternoon. The polite way to talk to people, yeah.
And so then, you know, she just ignores her and keeps running up to Atticus. And then, you know, you just hear her screaming in the background. And Atticus runs up and he's like, good afternoon, Miss blah, blah, blah. And he's like, you look great tonight. You look like a picture. And you just hear... behind her.
He starts complimenting her garden. Yeah,
but he says, you look like a picture. And Scout goes, didn't say what kind of picture.
Yep.
And I was like, yes.
Well, great, you know, line. This is also another example of his parenting or just his way of dealing with people.
Yeah.
He's a mediator.
He is. He definitely is. And that
he's a lawyer.
Well, he's, also in a public defender within his role as a lawyer. Mm-hmm. And a lawyer that, you know, takes on his role very seriously. And they're actually his role in this is defined later by a line that I'll get to because that was fantastic. And then so we get the scene where it's Atticus kind of putting the kids to bed. And Scout asks, "Do you think Boo Radley really does look in my window at night?" And when you hear the line, you're like, "Okay, that's ridiculous." But then later, now that you go back look at the movie, I'm like, "Maybe he is looking in your window every night."
They never actually say what Boo Radley's deal is either.
And I think the book does more.
Yeah.
And I think the book explains...
Like, if he's just agoraphobic or, like, what his deal is.
Oh, there's something. Like, we're going to get to Boo Radley when we get to Boo Radley because holy fuck, Boo Radley. And then, you know, we get Atticus sitting on the porch and the kids talking to each other like, how old was I when Mama died? And, you know, did you love Mama? Did I love Mama? And I'm like... This is a fucking heartbreaking conversation to be overhearing your kids have.
I can imagine Scout being the type who would ask this every goddamn night.
Oh, 100%.
I would be sitting on the fucking porch too.
Yeah, I don't remember being, because I haven't seen this in so long, like, I don't remember being as annoyed with Scout as I was when I watched the movie this time.
Like, Jem is the hero of this movie.
Where I'm like, girl, you need to chill out.
I will say that now, and I'm going to reiterate that later, but Jem is the one that it's like, he's the person in this movie that you're like, okay, this is the person.
Yeah.
If your town has any hope, that's your future mayor.
Yeah. Yeah, if you have any hope. So then the judge shows up on the porch and he goes, you heard about Tom Robinson? And he's like, yeah, I'll be there tomorrow, I know. And then we get this weird, like, that is the, like, we get the next day and the kid's doing tire rides on the skinniest ass tire.
Yeah, I'm like, no way somebody is actually going to get in this, right? No. What the fuck?
That was a concussion waiting to happen. And then, like, they showed the shot of her, like, going towards the Radley house. She was going straight for that telephone pole. Like, that was, like, beeline for it. And somehow missed it. Ended up on the Radley porch. And, you know, they are like, oh, we got to get out of here. You know, and Jem was like, I'm going to get on the porch. And then they have to run. And when they run from the Radley house, no matter if it's this time or whatever time, they always go farther than they have to.
Yeah.
Like, they live two houses down from the Radleys. They could just go back to their own yard and be fine.
Yeah, but what if he's faster than you think? And yeah, they see him.
But it's,
and then if, like, even if he sees where they are, he's going to be like, well, I know where those fuckers are.
Maybe they don't want him to follow them home.
It's more like he doesn't know where they live. It's so weird.
They're also children who apparently don't go to school.
Well, they do.
Right. They did.
It's the summer.
This starts during Dill's the summer.
Summer only. So then they're like, well, let's go to the courthouse and see where Boo Radley was locked up with the bats. So they go to the courthouse and they try to get, like, peek into the arraignment that's happening for Tom Robinson.
Yeah, what a coliseum this place is.
Yeah, for a small Alabama town, it's a pretty large courthouse.
Like, and literally everyone except for the winos are in there.
Well, but so they're climbing. They climb up to see in the window above the door.
Yeah.
And of course, Atticus comes out the side door.
I was thinking of, like, the later.
Yeah, yeah. But you get what you're talking about. Yeah, and he's like, "Well, what the fuck are you doing?" Like, that's literally his reaction. And he's like, "Go home." So the kids leave, and then as we find out later, Robert E. Lee is his name. His full name. Robert Ely Yule, which is the drunk abusive dad, comes out of the courtroom and he's like, you know, I'm sorry you end up getting stuck in this role, blah, blah, you know, well, you know, trying to, like, make it sound like Atticus, you know, has got the short end of the stick. And Atticus is basically like, I've been charged to defend this guy. I'm going to do it to the best of my ability. Like, he's just being very clear. Like, I'm going to try to get him off of these charges.
And Yule's entry officially is like, and here is your villain.
Yeah.
May as well walk out with the black hat on.
I will say that this movie is full of things that we now see as tropes, and I don't know if all of them started, like, were around as tropes then, right, when this movie was made, or if this helped establish those tropes. So I give it a little bit of grace on those things.
It felt like very TV.
Sure, like old TV.
It didn't really even feel cinematic. It's almost Baywatch follow the bikini girl. Like,
I get what you're saying, because it kind of just jumps around to the things.
At least in this case, it felt very, very hammy.
Well, I feel like we're still in the era of cinema when this was shot that they hadn't quite figured out how to delineate between cinema and theater.
Yes.
So they're still doing a lot of theatrical things in movies that feel weird now.
I mean, but there's a lot.
Seemed normal then. Like, there's a lot of overacting in the old movies and broad gestures.
The sporadic use of the voiceover. Like, it's not quite enough use of it to make it make sense. But, like, it was in and out of the movie.
Mm-hmm.
That does that to me. But also, yeah, the visuals, I think, A lot of in cinema, like, a lot of that visual stuff started to happen when people started watching Italian film.
Mm-hmm.
And we haven't really gotten, this is before that era. And I understand
people
that
were
as
still
well.
Trying to figure out cinema at this time, I think.
Sure. I think people still are trying to figure out cinema in some ways. So yeah. So then
name names.
Name names.
No, I'm just kidding.
Zack Snyder. Oh, sorry. Oof. Sorry.
I'm not arguing with
you. No, I would be surprised if you would. So then we get a scene where it's the evening and they're trying to sneak over to Boo's house, and so they're going to go around the back so nobody sees them. And they sneak in through the back gate, but as they're at the back gate, they're like crawling, and the gate squeaks as they try to open it. And so I'm just like, spit on it!
I'm like, this is oddly... This makes a weird sense of logic, but also tells me he's done this before.
But we get like a good like minute and a half of Dill and Scout just spitting on a gate hinge.
Well, that's why you can't have more... That's why you can't get more depth of... that's why you don't get any, you know, explanation about Boo Radley, because you had to spend a minute and a half of spitting.
Spitting. So then,
you know, it's a stylistic choice.
Also,
but...
as a lubricant, spit is not as good as some things when it comes to like rusty gate hinge.
Yeah,
but it's what they had.
It's what they had plenty of, apparently.
And these are also dumb kids.
Except none of them are really spitting. It was all pfft.
No, so my point isn't that...
I mean, they could have just had Dill open his mouth and enough would have come out of there eventually.
Oh. Like, it wasn't that they tried using spit as a lubricant. It's the fact that it worked that bothered me.
Yeah.
So then they sneak in, and Jem goes up onto the back porch and is, like, trying to look in the window, and you just see this big looming shadow, and it keeps getting closer, and then you see like a reaching for him, and I'm like, how do we not see this fucker at this point?
Yeah,
like, how did nobody see? They see the shadow. Where is he standing?
I'm like, I think they stole this right from Scooby-Doo.
Yeah. So they notice, and they take back off, and they try to crawl under the wire.
You have to, in this instance, I think you have to realize that our narrator, I mean, she's an adult now, but our narrator, this is from the perspective of a six-year-old girl.
So you're thinking that it was intentionally like, this is a child's memory.
This is a child's memory, okay, of what they saw.
Interesting. I never
the
thought about it that
creepy,
way.
Big, creepy, loomy shadow. Like,
I loved the shadow. I just didn't...
Probably just a dude.
The actual physical, like the physics of it, I'm like, he's got to be like right there, and he's not. Which is weird.
I think it's just, yeah, her memory of what it looked like.
So then they have to crawl back under
the... I want to appreciate that you went out of your way to really perhaps ascribe much more artistic license that might be...
Have you...
But then again, you could be right.
This is the role that Amanda's played in a lot of our episodes, though, of, well, if they're looking at it through this lens, or like, you're really trying to give more artistic credit to people than they sometimes deserve. I'm not saying you're wrong here. You might be right. But there are
Maybe
times
I'm
when you're
like... Maybe I'm
just
better looking at things from other perspectives than you guys are.
Bullshit.
Okay.
I watch David Lynch for fun.
Yeah, he watches David Lynch
for
fun.
So imagine how many perspectives I've seen things through.
Yeah.
That's just... David Lynch, I still say, is just what unchecked ADHD looks like.
So they have to crawl...
And transcendental meditation.
They have to crawl back under the wire, back into no man's land, apparently, to get out of the backyard. And Jem gets stuck and has to take his pants off.
As you do.
Right? So then they get out, and they're hiding behind what looks like a shed of some sort. And, of course, Dill gets called in, and he's like, gotta go! And then they get called in, but Jem's like, I can't go in without any pants on.
I don't have any pants on.
I gotta go back. And so he's like, I'll be back in 10 seconds. And so she sits there counting. We hear a gunshot. Jem shows back up with his pants, puts them back on. They go in. Everybody else is outside now looking at the front of the Radley house, because apparently old Mr. Radley tried to shoot a prowler. There was a prowler. Oh, goodness gracious. If they went after them, they could come after any of us. And we're all like, okay. Mm-hmm. Sure. And then that was the end of that, basically. So then we get a jump in time to the first day of school,
mm-hmm,
where Scout doesn't want to wear a dress.
Of course not.
And eats two bites of her breakfast and goes to school and immediately gets into a fight with Mr. Callahan's son. And I will just call him Syrup Boy because I don't remember his actual name.
Wall? It started with a W.
I don't know. Probably Wally or something.
Yeah, it might have been
Walter.
Wall. Yeah, it might be. So then Jem's like, well, Because and so we turns out the fight is about the fact that she remembers her lesson from the beginning that family does not have money, but they also don't want charity. And so the teacher tried to offer Syrup Boy Walter, whatever, a nickel for lunch, and Scout tried to correct her, like, it's not going to work. And then she gets in trouble, so she gets into a fight with him because...
This is where I was just like, Scout, you little shit. Because she's like... Yeah, she says, she's like, I tried to explain to the teacher, you know, why they won't take nothing from nobody, and now she's sore at me. So she decides to beat up this little kid who's already poor and doesn't have any lunch.
So this is the thing.
And now he just got beat up by a girl.
Scout is trying her hardest to learn empathy. Instead, and that's she's struggling with, right?
Okay, here. She's Dexter, though. I mean, like, nobody asked you to intercede. Mind your business.
It's her first day of school. She's got to learn.
She's very good at making friends.
Mm-hmm.
So Jem's like, look, we'll take you home for dinner so you can eat. And so they take him home for dinner, and he's like, I never had roast before.
Yeah, real poor, by the way. And he's with like, your housekeeper and your and fucking like, well,
what
roast.
What do you eat? And he's like, well, usually me and my dad go out hunting and get rabbits and squirrels and stuff. And Jem immediately is like, so you have your own gun?
Exactly.
And then, so they're eating, and he goes, kid, Walter goes, can I have some syrup? I'm like, what the fuck? Syrup? And like... I'm like, he's eating roast. Okay, whatever.
So I think he had cornbread, and he was putting it on the cornbread and everything else.
Yeah. So he went full Buddy the Elf with that syrup. Like,
well, yeah, because he doesn't have access to this amazing, wonderful thing, and it's offered to him in a pitcher.
A double-sized syrup pitcher.
Like, I also grew up in a house where my dad put syrup on his cornbread, so that's why I figured it was probably cornbread. That he was in, yeah, but then sense. He went all over the plate.
I'm a honey butter guy.
Ooh, yeah, honey butter's good. I like syrup. I just don't want a full Great Lake of it on my plate.
I don't even
same
like, really put that much syrup on things that would have syrup because it's, you know, a bit much.
But again, me ascribing things that. Giving people too much credit. This is a little kid that's probably never had access to syrup in his life, and all of a sudden he's handed a jug of it. Fuck yeah, he's going to pour it all over his stuff.
But also, Scout's reaction of basically, what the fuck is wrong with you?
Uh-huh.
Totally understandable.
Oh, yeah.
But then the maid, whatever her name is, was like, oh, fuck no. You're not going to belittle this little kid.
Yeah.
Like, you're coming into the kitchen.
That was awesome.
That was great. And then Scout goes to pout on the porch, and Atticus shows up, and he says to her...
you're being an asshole.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. He says, you never understand a person until you look at things from his point of view. And she's like, okay, right, Atticus.
Yes, sir.
He also had... this was also the scene, and I missed this. Where Atticus talks about killing a mockingbird,
mm-hmm.
and how it's a sin to kill a mockingbird because it doesn't hurt anybody. Like kill everything else, kill the crows, kill the you know the swallows, whatever, but don't kill a mockingbird.
I mean, he didn't quite say it like that, but
I think that's how he said it.
Now Nick is trying to ascribe more, maybe not good, but just more acting.
There you
more
go.
More insanity to it. No, but he explains that. The reason is that a mockingbird doesn't cause any harm. There's no reason to kill it.
Exactly.
Parakeet,
a mockingbird isn't game. Innocent. We don't harm the innocent, I think, was the point of that lesson.
Yes, we don't harm the innocent. And speaking of harming the innocent, the next scene is the scene that I remember from the book and loved as a kid and was like really impacted and was kind of like, yeah, here it is in the movie, which is the scene with the rabid dog.
Mm-hmm.
Where... we see this rabid dog coming down the street, and everybody's like, get in the house! And they call Atticus, and they come out. I think it's Atticus and the sheriff. I don't know. It's hard to recognize the sheriff in this movie.
Because
he doesn't wear a uniform?
Right.
At all?
Or a badge, even?
Yeah.
Sometimes I was like, is the sheriff also the prosecutor? Like,
no.
But it's just like, everything is...
There were a lot of old white men in this movie that looked exactly the same.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Unless I recognize you from something else, I literally don't know
who you are. They could have literally just given him a sheriff's uniform and it would have worked.
You could have,
or a badge.
Don Knotts would have been fine.
A gun belt.
Something.
Yeah, but so they get there, and he's like, "Here, Atticus, you take the gun." And Atticus is like, "I don't like guns."
And maybe also have him be somebody who's not the biggest coward on earth.
Yeah, the sheriff kind of sucks in this movie. But to be fair, he gets his moment at the end of the movie a little bit. But he's like, "Here, you take the gun and shoot the dog." And Eddie's like, "I'm not shooting the dog." And he's like, "You're the best shot in town." And the whole time, Jim's like, "You say what now?"
He's yeah, very never, focused on this whole gun
and,
thing.
And, yeah. And never mind
that. He's a little obsessed with guns.
And never mind the fact that, you know, he already, like, obviously Atticus knows of this fascination. And now you are asking him to do this thing that he doesn't want his son doing, that right. He happens to be so good at, in front of him.
And he knows he has to do it because it's a safety issue with his
right.
dog.
So this is his sense of duty again.
So yeah, he tries to aim with his glasses on, and he flopping around on his face. So he puts them on the ground, and he aims and he shoots the dog, and he puts the glasses back on, and then he leaves. And that was about it, right?
Yeah, that was it. Yeah.
The book, if I remember right, the book had a lot more going on in this, because this was a really like had a lot of symbolism throughout the book, like this idea of having to put down the rabid dog and, you know, like doing the right thing even though it hurts. Right, there's a lot to it, but the movie kind of glossed this scene over a little bit. I'm like, they almost could have gone with not put this in the movie, and you wouldn't have noticed.
I mean, you would have learned is that Atticus was a good shot,
right?
And
which is never used again, right, in the movie. I don't know. It just that part disappointed me a little bit, because I just as someone who it has been decades since I've read the book, that scene always clung to me.
Yeah, this is 30 years for both viewing and reading for me. So, and to say, yeah, I saw it is like saying, yeah, I like could pick out a sunset like out of a million.
It's fair. That's fair. So then we get that evening, Atticus is like, we got to go see Helen Robinson, which is Tom Robinson's wife. So they drive out to the Black homestead. He goes in to visit, and old drunky bastard boy himself shows up, and he's like looking in the car, got his hand on the window, looking at.
This is one of those very, like I said, theatrical things that's like way heavy handed and overdone, yeah, with him stumbling out and looking in, like it's very.
Jem looking terrified and Scout being completely asleep, and yeah.
I needed that for what? Just to. Some really heavy-handed, foreshadowing.
Well, and that's, I forgive it a little bit because of the foreshadowing of what happens later, which I think is actually a really powerful moment in this movie.
I just think a single image of him doing it would have been
okay. Yeah, they definitely overplayed it a bit.
Yeah.
But also, I think it was to amp up the anxiety that Jem was feeling. Right, where it's kind of like you forgiving the shadow earlier. I think I'm forgiving this a little bit because it is that idea of this is Jem freaking out, and we get that a little bit. So then Atticus, after like he comes out and you know he tells him like, hey, he's harmless. You know, tells Jem he's harmless, and he says, "There's a lot of ugly things in the world. I wish I could keep you away from all of them." You know, like he basically saying, "Look, we're gonna have to live with this." Like, I wish you didn't have to, but we do, which I thought was a really great line. So then he drops the kids back off, and then he goes back. He leaves again in the evening, and
His whole function as a parent is basically show up, drop one-liners, and leave.
Yeah, drop a knowledge bomb and leave. He's the mic drop parent.
I mean, that was kind of how fathers were thought of and represented back then. Just like,
right.
Finch.
Literally, father knows best was come in, drop some pearls of wisdom, and then leave.
You just got Atticus.
No real function of raising the kids.
Finch this.
So we go back to school, and Scout keeps getting into fights. And we have this conversation between Scout and Atticus after she gets into a fight, and she says, hey, this kid says you're a lover.
Mm-hmm.
And Atticus is like, don't say that word. And he's like, look, you're going to hear this. You're going to be hearing this because this trial's coming. And I'm sorry. That's what's going to happen. You're just going to keep hearing. You just got to live with it. And then we get Jem coming home walking like an Egyptian. And they stop. And oh, we missed it earlier. At one point, Jem was out at night and saw in the knot of the tree a medal.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So then he's coming home from walking like an Egyptian, and Scout meets him basically right by the tree, and they see that there's these two figures carved out of soap, apparently. Didn't look like soap, but they said soap.
Looked like wood, but yeah.
They said soap, so, and they're like, these look like us.
Look, you don't understand. Soap was really hard back then.
They're like, this
soap looks... was made of lye back then.
They're like, this looks just like our hair. And I'm like, no, it fucking doesn't. But sure, we'll believe it looks just like you.
Mm-hmm. I'll believe that you made this and you think it looks like your hair.
And then as they're like talking about this, Mr. Radley comes in with a trowel of cement and just blops it right into the knot. And
yep.
I'm like, that's some timing. Mm-hmm. And so they kind of sneak off with the figures as he's closing up the knot hole. How is that not creep? Like, I understand, like, we look at it and, like, I think the book does a better job of making Boo Radley sympathetic. But all of this is real fucking creepy to me. Like, I carved figures of you.
Yeah.
Like, what the fuck? So then we find out, like, in the evening, like, Jem has this cigar box, and Scout's like, what's in the box? And I'm like, what's in the box?
Just
what's
the creepiest box? Shit you can imagine.
And he's like, all the things that I got out of the knot in the tree. The metal, some doodads, a broken watch, our figures.
There was a knife.
There was a knife. Oh, yeah, the Swiss Army knife kind of thing. And I'm like, okay, so it's like cool. Like it's like he's a fucking crow. Leaving them shiny things because they gave him something shiny or something. You know what I mean? That's because crows
do that. They did. They did.
Their love?
Sure.
But it is kind of like, you know.
I would have said annoyance. But
crows do that. They barter in shiny.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or they leave you gifts as a thank you or to being their friend.
Right.
Which I think is what Boo is doing.
Right.
Like, they're the closest thing he has to a friend.
Because he sees them in the window every night as they sleep.
He just sees them running around outside, probably, but...
That's true. They must run past his fucking window 1,000 times.
Mm-hmm.
So then we get to jump back to the next summer where Dill's back. And we find out Tom Robinson's trial starts tomorrow. And, of course, the night before the trial, Dill is staying the night at their house. Which makes so much sense. And Atticus has to go to the jail because... Surprise, surprise, all the white people are putting together a lynch mob to go kill Tom Robinson before the trial even starts. So Atticus gets ready to go, and what does he grab? A floor lamp. Like, dude, we know you can use a gun. You're taking a floor lamp to the jail to help
Atticus
protect.
He's like, you all know how good I am with a gun? I'm
not bringing it.
Nah.
Atticus is a pacifist for
yes,
the most
he is,
part.
And I appreciate
and I
that.
I think... We see throughout this how good he is at reading people and diffusing situations. And I think he probably understood that bringing a gun is not going to diffuse
a lynch mob. But bringing a floor lamp.
It's going to make it worse.
Yeah, basically bringing the gun
is
like...
Well, he still had to try to defend himself with something.
He didn't bring it for defense, though. He brought it to read his book outside.
Oh, well.
But it's just, it was the most ridiculous thing I'd, like, because you're
not
watching
a flashlight,
him,
a floor lamp.
You're watching him getting ready to leave, and I'm like... At first, I'm like, it looks like he's grabbed a rifle because it's a big, long floor lamp.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, what the fuck? And then I'm like, there's this lampshade on that's a lamp. Why does he have a lamp? And then we get to the next scene where he's actually sitting outside the jail with the lamp. You can see the wire going into the window to be plugged in. And I'm like, this is fucking some insane shit right here. And so the kids sneak out to go find him.
This is like a tactic Clint Eastwood never would have thought of.
No. He's in the reading. The lynch mob shows up. The kids come and they see that this is happening. They're confronting Atticus and they're like, you need to get out of the way. And Atticus is like, I'm not going anywhere. And then Scout comes running up and is like, Atticus! Atticus! And runs like through the people. And Atticus is like, get the fuck out of here. Like,
this is where Space Ghost had the idea to give him those two fucking kids who are always getting into jail.
But Scout
and Dill's the monkey.
This is the least stoic Atticus is in this entire movie, is in this scene.
Well, yeah, because he sees stakes.
Yeah, he doesn't want his kids getting hurt or even seeing him get hurt.
But for once, Scout, instead of inciting a fight, diffuses one with her innocence.
Hi, Mr. Cunningham.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She just starts saying their names and asking them questions, and they sort of realize, oh.
I want to point this out because this is the thing that got me the most, is we've got Atticus and Jem and Scout and Dill. Poor fucking Dill. Didn't sign up for any of this. And you can just see him standing there while there's this mob around him. He's just like, what the fuck am I doing
here? You know what? The day he met those Finch kids, he knew they were trouble.
Yeah, but this gives him actual stories to tell instead of lies about his dad. Yeah. Poor kid.
His dad that doesn't exist or...
Or is a pilot or a train man, something.
But you could tell he's like, I don't want to be here. What the fuck am I doing here?
We're going to use you as a human shield.
So insane. But yeah, but Scout diffuses the situation. I don't know if it was intentional or not. I think partly.
No, I think it was just pure innocence.
But she's like, oh, say hi to your boy for me. You know, she didn't tell him how much syrup he ate. But
or how she beat his ass.
Or how she beat his ass.
That's the part that bothered me. It was like, don't you remember? I beat your son's ass.
No, she's like, don't you remember? You brought me hickory nuts. Yeah. I'm like, what the fuck are hickory nuts anyway?
I wonder it really, really hurt when you run over them with the lawnmower and they whack you in the leg.
Are they any good?
You can eat them, but they're... yeah.
What are they for, then, if not to eat?
It's better than eating raw squirrel.
So when you have a hickory tree, it drops its nuts every year.
Got it.
And they're really hard. All I know is my parents have hickory trees in their yard. And yeah, if you mow and then you run over them and they hit the tree and bounce back off and hit you, it's like getting shot with a paintball.
Oh, no, it's just that you said you can eat them as though there's like another utility for them.
There are some things that you can eat, but you just
You can eat acorns, too, but you typically don't.
All right.
Well, or black walnuts.
It also depends on the acorn, too. Like some acorns are more palatable than others.
If you are poor and foraging, you can eat hickory nuts. If you can afford to go to the grocery store, you're probably not going to eat hickory nuts.
Yeah, you're going to switch over to Brazil nuts.
You can only eat so many of those, too, before you get sick.
I'd have to try hickory nuts.
Fair enough.
Yeah, fair enough. Me too. I don't know if you can roast them like chestnuts.
That's what I was thinking.
Maybe. So, yeah. So, the mob is like, okay, we're going home. And I'm like, my first thought was, everybody's like, okay, it's over, but like they could just wait an hour and come back. I don't know.
Well, they got lathered up, and then they got the bucket of water dropped on them from Scout, and they were like, oh, I guess we'll go home then. Like, I think it diffused the situation enough for that period of time.
So next day starts, and it's trial day. Big trial in town. Everybody's there. Courtroom's packed. The Black Reverend tells the kids that they can come up with him into the balcony to watch the trial, which they probably should not be watching this trial.
I'm just going to say something that I thought of. The scene is why John Grisham has a writing career.
I actually thought about John Grisham as I was watching this, because it's Atticus's defense. I'm like, this is very Grisham.
But, I mean, it's also he lifted it for A Time to Kill, basically.
Yes, which he wrote a sequel to A Time to Kill.
Didn't read it.
I just read it a few months ago. Because
it's kind of recent, right?
Yeah. It was like Sycamore Row, it's called.
Oh, yeah. It's like 30 years later.
Yeah, yeah. It takes place a good amount of time later. It was an interesting book. It wasn't my favorite of his. So the reason I say the kids probably shouldn't be there is this is a rape trial.
Yeah.
Like, I didn't... Like, I remember, obviously, that Tom Robbins was going to be charged. I thought it was murder. Like, I remembered it as a murder trial, but it's a rape trial. Which I'm like, fuck.
Oh, no, I remembered it as a rape trial just because I remembered that girl going on and on and on about the Schiffer robe.
Well, remember, I didn't watch the movie. I've only read the book. And it's been forever. So I'm like, whatever. Like, okay. So it's a rape trial that the kids are at. The reverend should have been like, you know what? This is not the trial for you.
Here's the thing, Nick. Again, you got to keep in mind when this was, and kids just were not sheltered the way they are now.
Kids used to go to the Coliseum too.
Kids used to work in the coal mines.
Yep,
and some places they still do.
Some kids used to be shoved down chimneys to clean them.
Yep.
Yeah, that's fair. That is fair. And so the first person called up is Bob Ewell. And when I state your name, he's like, Robert E. Lee Ewell. And I'm like, of fucking course it is. Mm-hmm. Robert E. Lee. And then the first thing Atticus asked him to do is to write his name. And...
which is somebody who's sided with the South. Of course right. He can.
There was that moment of, you can write your name, can't you? Well, yeah, of course. Yeah.
This is also very ham-handed, how this is...
It's a little ham-handed, or
just
yes. Like,
it's just not even a logical way to go.
No, I got it right away. And I think it didn't have to be, like, I got it right away, but it was.
But there should have been some more, like, I don't know, like, build-up?
Like, the whole, like, which side of her, which eye was blackened.
Yeah.
And, like, write your name and he's left-handed. And I'm like, okay, well, that just gave it away. And I'm like, but also... And I forgot the twist of he can't use his left hand at all. Mm-hmm. But like I'm like, you can hit people with both hands. It's not that big of a thing. Or if the angle's right, you know, you can backhand. Like I'm like, it's not the best. I mean, he nails them with it. But like, it's honestly in reality not the best you could do for a defense there. To be fair, it's very clear that he's innocent.
No, it's not even that. It was just kind of like, it didn't seem like the buildup made sense. It almost seemed like things were just taken out of, like,
well,
if you're trying to build it, it's
I think it's because the movie and the book in some ways it's about the children's experience once again, and so the courtroom drama is plays secondary to it. And so we don't get the whole pretrial build up and all of the things. True. We don't even get opening arguments in this.
Who knows, in Alabama, they might not even do them.
Well, we only got one closing argument in this, too. So, like, we missed a lot of what we are used to now as, like, that kind of trial movie
kind of
stuff. We get the I can't remember her name. The female, the supposed rape victim.
Schifferobe.
Yes, her name is Schifferobe.
It may as well be.
And she goes, oh,
Lady Yule, who knows?
Yeah, the young Yule. And she's like, I don't recollect if he hit me. And then, like, as she's getting worked up, she just goes, I got something to say, and I'm going to say it, and then I'm not going to say anything else. I'm like, what kind of fucking trial is this? It doesn't work that way. You're on the stand. If they want to keep asking you questions, they get to. And I'm like,
I'm sure she's right. Not exactly well versed with how trials work.
Also, no, I'm pretty sure no one.
But the fact they let her get away with it,
I could argue that no one but Gregory Peck has any idea what's going on.
Also, the judge in this film does not give a single fuck about anything happening.
Yeah. Hey, Atticus, take
he's
this.
Just, he's just like,
at the end of the day. Everybody knew, and we as an audience knew, they're going to find the black man guilty.
Yeah.
Period. Yeah. It no amount of very good, very obvious defense is going to keep them from finding the black man guilty.
And you know what? In that context, the fact that it is so blunt, Peck's, or Atticus's defense, goes to show that, like, look, I'm really hammering this home.
Yeah,
like, he's very clear. He's trying to make it as obvious as
like,
possible.
So basically, I like unless you're a big fucking racist,
which most people were back then.
Yeah.
So then we get Tom Robinson's testimony, which also, like, once again, out acting Gregory Peck in this movie a little bit. This is the guy who played Tom Robinson. Like, he really got there.
He looked like he was on the verge of tears the whole time.
And, like, it's so wild. When I went into this, and like I said, it's been forever since I read the book, I figured that they had a mutual relationship, sexual relationship. No, she sexually assaulted him.
Mm-hmm.
And dad saw it happen and lost his mind and beat up the daughter. And then they both blamed the guy and said he raped her. And I'm like, this is fucking wild.
I mean, that's something that happened a lot.
Yes. But I actually thought they were just fucking.
Mm-hmm.
So the fact that he was even more innocent than that is wild.
That's, just another way. Right. It's like, okay, you could not in their minds, they could all maybe excuse it if he was doing something to the daughter. But wait a minute.
Yeah. And so he asks him, he's like, well, why didn't you say it? And he's like, why did you keep doing this stuff? Why did you keep helping her? Why? And he just goes, I felt sorry for her. And everybody's just like, what the fuck? A black guy feeling sorry for a white person? Unheard of.
Yep.
And we get Atticus's closing statements where he, and here's my thing, and I know that there Harper Lee eventually wrote a sequel, and apparently it doesn't paint Atticus in as great of a light as the original
book. It's actually not really a sequel. I was reading up on this. It's like an early draft of To Kill a Mockingbird.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because she only wrote this. To Kill a Mockingbird is the only book she ever wrote.
No, the second book came out just before she died.
Yeah, they. It was like
5 years ago or something like that. Yeah.
Yeah. It's supposed to coincide with the 50th.
Tell it on something or whatever. Blame it on the rain.
Tell it on
go
the
tell
mountain.
It on the mountain. Yeah, that's exactly what
I thought. It's something like that though. It is a weird title like that. But this is the moment where it's like everybody always takes Atticus Finch as this great non-racist figure and, you know, figure of anti-racism. But he talks about the sin of kissing a black man in his speech. And I know he's talking about, you know, the society at that time, but, you know, it seems like it's very clear that he even believes, it seems like that kind of a thing is not acceptable.
I didn't get that at all.
I got that a little bit. And so
I got that he was playing to what they think. Like, you guys think this is so horrible that you're willing to hang this man because she found him attractive.
I most of his speech, yes, that's how it felt. But that one moment, I was like, it stuck on me a little
bit. He's Finch Romney.
Finch Romney. His favorite meat is hot dog.
Well, no, they had the roast. Maybe the roast was made from hot dog. I don't know.
Right.
They have hot dogs.
And then I don't know where this line came from. I don't know if it was during his speech or if he was talking to somebody else, but somebody said something about minds of their caliber. And I was like, damn, that was good. Mm-hmm. Calling people morons. Love it. So then, yeah, they wait 2 hours and the jury comes back. And there's that big tense moment and the obvious answer comes out of guilty. Because all of those white farmers, you know, there was zero chance they were going to find Tom Robinson not. And there's a wonderful moment here at the end of the trial. All the white people clear out, right? And all of the black people up in the balcony stand and wait for Atticus to leave. And, you know, they have, like, he makes Scout stand up and he's like, you know, respect what's going on. Mm-hmm. You know, he's leaving. In this beautiful moment of respect for a man who...
We all knew where this was going, right, but at least you tried.
He fought anyway. And the dignity of that moment, and it was really beautiful. But also, it's kind of a white savior moment, now that I think about it, too.
It's also in a...
It is, but at the same time, there wasn't going to be a black lawyer back then.
To be fair, we don't know. Did they not allow black people to leave first?
Well, no, it wasn't even leave first. I mean, well, probably. But also, the fact that there was a segregated courtroom in the first place.
Yeah.
Was, you know... Obviously, rural Alabama in the 1930s. Of course, it was.
Do they have to wait for Atticus to leave?
I don't think they have to wait for Atticus to leave. They probably had to wait for the white crowd to leave. Hmm. Also, if they hadn't, there could have been some trouble in the middle of the courthouse. And I think it was. It might have been the reverend, but I don't remember exactly who said it, but somebody said, talking about Atticus, there are some men in this world that are born to do unpleasant jobs for us.
Mm.
And I'm like, that's a great line, too.
Mm-hmm.
It's like John McClane. Sometimes you just gotta be, some people are just born to be that guy.
That guy.
Are you sure you don't mean Bruce Willis, because somebody has to do all these horrible movies?
Oh, poor Bruce Willis.
Yeah, you say that now.
So then we get later that evening more unsurprising news that
we're gonna take a pause, just open your drink.
That Tom Robinson is dead.
Oh, what a horrible way to come back from the can pop.
Well, I was going to edit it out, but now that you've said that, now it has to stay in. Does anybody believe that he actually tried to escape, or do we all think he was just murdered?
I think the lynch mob came back.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And so we get the scene where...
I mean, shit, they barely waited. It felt like Atticus left and like, all right, we got him.
Yep.
Yeah. And that's probably what happened.
Now that they had, like, an excuse, even more so, that he's been found guilty. Now we can kill him real good.
Yep.
Fucking redneck fuckers. So then we get Atticus going to his widow's home to give her the news. And, you know, we get that moment of, you know, her finding out and nobody being fucking surprised, but also gutted.
Yeah.
And I thought she fell off the porch entirely, into a bush at first. I was like, holy shit.
And guess who fucking shows up? Robert E. fucking Lee, coward ass, drunk bitch.
Of course.
And he spits in Atticus's face. And you want to reach out across that screen and just pop him right in the fucking nose.
There's a certain type of person, and without getting too much into it, still relevant today, that even when they win, they're still just so angry. And I don't get it.
And Atticus does the right thing here. And this is such a powerful moment of him just wiping it off and walking over to his car and leaving. Instead of being baited into it.
Yeah.
And
I probably still would have snuck in on my, like, as I passed him, just go right up to his ear and just go, bitch.
I mean, he's a fucking coward for doing it, doing what he did.
Oh, of course.
So, you know, that's a really powerful moment.
That's another thing people like this like to do. They like to bait you into throwing the first.
Yeah, because they don't want to be the instigator.
Yeah, so they can have their precious, righteous indignation.
Yeah, it wasn't my fault. Fucking coward. So then we get another time jump, because this movie's full of time jumps. And I don't know if we really need them that much, but we get them. October.
Yeah, are the seasons really this important?
No. I think because there's more in the book that they were like, let's not just throw it all into one summer. Let's respect the timeline of the book, but it feels real choppy.
There's just a lot of extraneous detail that happens. Like, nothing particularly exciting happened between the trial and Halloween.
Well, I think
that's fair, because the narration does say that this was our last adventure.
Well, we find out kind of why.
Yeah, but
also, they're growing up.
I was going to say, even still, it's like, you're not... I don't know, I took that as really sad for some reason. Like, well, our lives are never going to be this interesting ever again.
Well, it's also the end of innocence. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, they sat through a rape trial and found out a guy got killed afterwards, but this is the moment where they actually lose their innocence, is on Halloween. Because it's October, and there's a pageant, and Scout is a ham.
Yes, she is.
Which... that ham was made from fiberglass. I don't know if you guys saw that. I'm like, holy shit.
Scout.
And it said ham on it.
It said
even
ham
though
on
it was, it wasn't a canned ham. It was a block of ham, but it said ham.
It was a really badly formed leg of a ham leg.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That said ham, so you would know what it is.
Yeah, just like, did Boo Radley also make the ham?
Looks just like a ham. So, they gotta go home. They're running late because Scout couldn't find her clothes. So she has to go home as a ham. And for some reason,
these kids are always losing their clothes. Jeb lost his pants.
Jeb lost his pants.
She forgot, couldn't find her dress.
They both lost their mom.
Oh.
And their innocence.
Well, we're getting there because they decide to take the back way home. Because why not? Through, like, the woods.
Because who wants to be seen as a ham? And
I mean, yeah, Halloween? I think it was a shortcut, and I think she didn't want to be walking around as a ham.
So they get jumped.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't really see much. We just see that they get jumped, and we get these, like, arms in the shots. And then we get a second set of arms. And then, like, I think Scout kind of, like, tucks into her ham. And we hear Jem scream, but then she looks back out and we see a figure carrying Jem away.
Mm-hmm.
And so when she gets home, Jem's there. the cops show up. The sheriff without a uniform comes. And Atticus is like, someone's been after my children. And the sheriff's like, well, yeah, we found Robert E. Lee dead with a knife through his chest. And this is so fucking weird. So, like, the cop, the officer's like, well, you know, I don't, somebody brought Jem home. And Scott's like, somebody brought Jem home. Who carried him home? And then the door opened, like the back of, on the other side of the door.
And Boo is just standing there.
Fully fucking grown Robert Duvall, who looks a little bit like Robert De Niro in this movie for some reason.
Is that Robert Duvall?
Does it's he play Robert fucking Duvall.
Because I just remember seeing this, and again, I haven't seen this in a very long time, and I was looking at it, and I'm like, has Bill Radley always been kind of hot? Because, like, he's kind of hot.
Like, in an emo, like, The Cure kind of way.
Oh, for sure.
I was
going
to say,
but
he's back there like Bella Lugosi.
Fucking the great Santini's like, hiding behind the door.
I like goth dudes. I don't know what to tell you.
No, but, like, I saw his name. I mean, again, 30 years. 30 years ago, I didn't know who Robert Duvall was.
Right.
Same.
So when I watched it this time, I saw his name in the opening credits. And I'm sitting there.
Like, who is he in this?
Yeah.
And I forgot about it, and I'm actually. Like,
he's already got a receding hairline in this film.
Yeah.
Like, I always pictured Boo Radley as like a teenager. Kind and then you get Robert fucking Duvall behind the door, and he's behind the door the whole time this conversation's happening too, which is real fucking weird.
Yeah, like, did Atticus not see him bring...
No, Atticus knew he was there.
Oh, okay.
He was the only one that knew he was behind the door.
Well, these kids haven't been through enough tonight. Let's give them a little scare.
So then Atticus is like, oh, well, I'm going to go talk to the sheriff. So they leave the room and just leave Boo Radley in the bedroom with the kids. And I'm like, I can't he just rescue the kid, but... Fuck. What the fuck?
By all means.
And then, like, he takes Scout's hand, and it just made me think of, like, Frankenstein's monster and the little girl.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, this is some unhinged shit. And then the sheriff's like, oh, yeah, yeah. So they talk about it, and, like, you know, Atticus is like, oh, no. You know, he was trying to, like, be like, it was self-defense. And the cop's like, dude, Jem didn't stab him. It's very clear Jem didn't stab him. And he's like, Baba.
Oh, yeah, because he's like, I can't remember if Jem is 12 or 13. And he's like having a moment. Like,
He's trying to build a defense.
Yeah, how do I not remember my son's age? But also, if he's 13, then he's going to get tried this way. But if he's only 12, then it should be this way. And
the sheriff's like, oh, Bob, he fell on his knife. And he says, let the dead bury the dead. And I'm like, that's a fucking great line. But yeah, so that's the movie.
So wait, are we just taking this on like that he definitely did it?
Oh, Boo definitely killed
Boo
him.
Oh, Boo did it.
Oh, Boo did.
Boo did.
But you kept saying he's 12 or 13.
Because
Boo Radley is supposed to be 12 or 13?
No.
Atticus thinks Jem stabbed him.
Okay.
So he's building a defense out loud, and the sheriff is like...
It wasn't Jem.
It wasn't Jem, man.
But like, also, it wasn't anyone.
Yeah, he's like,
that guy.
Clearly, he fell on the knife. Like,
yeah.
We know Boo did it to save Jem. Like, this poor kid is unconscious with a black eye. Like, we don't know exactly what happened
and
to him.
And on the red set of his face.
I did clock that when I watched the movie.
Well, something clocked him right in the red
left-handed drunk fucker clocked him right in the face. I don't know. The representation of Boo Radley fucks with me in this movie. Like, I remember the book thinking that he was more of a sympathetic figure. Whereas, and always kind of... The lore about him was nowhere near correct to who he is. But we don't get enough of Boo Radley in this movie to get that. We just get creepy fucking Robert Duvall standing in the corner.
Because all we're getting are, like, the weird stories of the losers from It.
And bits of stalkerism
that
we're seeing in the movie. And so, like, I don't think it builds the sympathy of Boo Radley enough. And it makes me feel like he's still a fucking creep standing
there. But that's
there.
Why the Frankenstein's monster thing is so, like, that seems like the goal.
I don't like that, though.
You cannot like it. I'm just saying, obviously, it was intentional.
But it also feels different than the book in that sense. I think the book definitely...
The movie since I've read the book, and I don't remember enough about the book. Like, I read it in school.
Yeah.
And I don't know if I've read it again but I've seen the movie, at least in my teenage years.
Curious about rereading the book now.
Yeah.
From after watching the movie. But I always remembered, and once again, decades, but that Boo Radley, like, you learn a lot more about Boo in the book that gives you sympathy for him.
Yeah.
And I feel like that's a big thing that got chopped in this movie.
Or at least maybe more, because a lot of things books do. It humanizes
him more.
A lot of things that books do will give you, like, the inner thoughts of other characters, so maybe the book is more, like, because clearly Sheriff and Atticus are unconcerned.
Well, the book is written 100% from Scout's monologue, I believe.
But maybe it's just her, like, she feels safe with him because her dad and the sheriff seem unconcerned about him, so
that's fair.
He must be a safe person.
But she's also more of a forgiving person because she's a child.
Yeah.
Oh, but also, you'd think that the rabid dog scene is almost kind of like a parallel.
It is. And that's what I loved about it in the book, is like you get that parallel. And it's such a wonderful parallel for a lot of things, including the rabid racism that happens in the South, that happened in the South at that time. And maybe still. Or in Ohio when Nazis walk down the street. Sorry. Just had to drop that in there. Fucking Nazis. Sorry.
You actually apologizing for fucking Nazis?
No, I'm apologizing for
beginning to derail this conversation. Yes, it's fine.
Yes.
We all know what's going on.
Yeah. So yeah, that's the movie. Some of my final thoughts. The kid that played Jem outacted everybody in this movie. He fucking killed it. Except for Robert Duvall looking like Robert De Niro, but with eye makeup.
But also pulling his best Bela Lugosi.
Oh my god.
Or Herman Munster. You'd be the judge.
Robert Duvall has done so many things. Like, I'm like, this is the same guy that was the great Santini. He was also in Apocalypse Now smelling napalm in the morning.
He's like, also the consigliere in Godfather.
Yes. He's also in Gone in 60 Seconds.
My favorite lead role of his is the Apostle.
Oh, he was good in the Apostle. You ever see Get Low? He's great in Get Low.
I really only know old. And I don't mean, like, old, like, a long time ago, but, like, old, like, over 50 Robert Duvall.
Well, to be fair, I feel like that's most of what we got.
Yeah.
So,
because he's, like, 98 now.
Yeah, he's really old. I already mentioned my slight criticisms of Peck's performance, even though he did win an Academy Award for this. I do feel like the film feels a bit oversimplified at times. I'm being critical because I'm critical of shit, but I like the movie. I think it was a good movie, and my score is going to show you that I like the movie. But also, I think, especially when it's a film that's lauded as much as this one is, you have to go into it with a critical eye, I think.
Well, this is one of those that it's on those lists of classics where I think a lot of times you go back and look at all the classics and, like, why are they still classics? Because so many things have been done so much better now, but at the time,
yes,
they were groundbreaking. Well, and so
the social justice issues within this is what was really groundbreaking.
Yeah.
Both the book and the movie.
Because
even at this point in time, Hollywood was still very segregated.
Yes.
And so that you can't take that importance away from either of those pieces of media, is that social significance within them. And that's probably part of the reason that Peck won Best Actor, too, was because, like, the fact that he took on this role, which some people would not at that point in time, they'd be like, no way am I doing that movie, is hugely important. So it's almost like the Oscar wasn't just for his acting, but for the fact that he decided to actually stand up and do this.
Yeah.
He showed he's no Burt Reynolds.
Okay.
I just assume if Burt Reynolds would have been offered it, he would have done it.
John Wayne probably wouldn't have done this movie.
No, John Wayne definitely wouldn't have done this movie. Yeah. Well, he might have played Robert E. Lee Yule.
No, because he wouldn't want to play the bad guy.
Fair enough.
If Robert E. Lee Yule was the hero in this movie, John Wayne would have played.
But I guarantee you, John Wayne would not have seen him as the bad guy.
That's the point, yeah.
So he would have felt like, I get an unjust death at the end.
For those of you that don't know what we're talking about, John Wayne was really, really racist.
Spoilers.
Yeah.
I was going to say that.
Sorry if he was one of your heroes, but he just was.
I like some John Wayne films, but
if he was one of your heroes, Chances are it's because you are also a racist.
Well, people liked the movies he was in because he always played the hero.
What okay. was it? That he was, did he walk out or he did something the year, what's his name, won an Oscar and had a Native American woman accepted for him?
I don't remember, but I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, it was, what's his name? The Godfather.
Marlon Brando?
Marlon Brando. It wasn't, I don't think it was for the Godfather. It might have been for the Godfather. But he won an Oscar and didn't show up, and he had a Native American woman come up and give the speech.
It would have to have been something that early, and, because John Wayne...
John Wayne reacted in some sort of way that was not good.
Yeah, he didn't...
Yeah.
No offense. I'll take... If I have to take all three Godfathers, I even with that third one, I'd still take that over... His entire John Wayne's entire film.
He had some really good movies.
Look, I like The Searchers, as much
is
as anybody.
So good.
But if you're asking me what I'd rather have,
I would rather have Marlon Brando than John Wayne as a human being. I can tell you that.
Wow, that's
not even when he got crazy.
I mean, that's not even saying a lot,
right? Yeah, because Brando was real crazy.
Would you take Brando and his son?
Who's his son?
Oh, he was a killer.
Was he?
Yeah.
Oh God, I don't know if I can go that far.
Christian Brando, I think his name.
Nice. So yeah, did you guys have final thoughts on this film too?
Well, you brought up the
Oscars. Okay,
so, not the only Gregory Peck was not the only Oscar nominee actor in the movie.
Mm-hmm.
Mary Badham, who played Scout, was, believe it or not, nominated for Best Supporting Actor.
Would you really nominate one of the kids who should have been Jem?
Oh, for sure, because she wasn't even that good. I was, I was watching this and just like one of those movies where I'm like, yeah, this revolves around kids, and kids are almost never the greatest actors, so like the acting in this is meh.
Yeah, we're talking, this is sub Sean Astin Goonies.
Right.
How dare you?
I'm saying Sean Astin is just as deserving of an Oscar nomination.
There, I will say there are movies that I've seen where child performances are fantastic.
Oh,
I think
Jem
was fantastic in this. I know you didn't like the movie as much as me. Beast of the Southern Wild, the little girl in that movie was amazing. Got nominated for an Oscar for that.
There's a reason there are so many Fannings.
The kids in the remake of It were all fantastic.
Yeah, that was a
Well, Finn Wolfhard is just...
But all of the kids were fantastic.
Which I couldn't say about the adults. But, you know, that's another... As a note, she did not win.
No, I think Peck was the only one that won.
What? You say Anna Paquin?
I said
no,
Peck was
Peck
the only
was
one
the only
won.
One
oh,
that
yes,
won.
Yes. Oh, I'm sorry.
Yes, Anna Paquin, another
eventually,
child star.
Who did win an Oscar.
Yeah.
Well, that's why I thought you said.
And then became Sookie.
Fellow nominees, Angela Lansbury in The Manchurian Candidate.
Ooh.
And the winner was Patty Duke. For playing Helen Keller
in the Miracle Worker.
So you talk about a movie that revolves around a lot of a kid. Pretty good. Pretty good.
Wow. So The Manchurian Candidate, the original one, came out the same year as To Kill a Mockingbird. And both of those films could be recreated right now and be and have...
Have
impact.
Relevance.
Yeah. Relevance, thank you. That was
current event
find.
Relevance.
Holy shit.
Well, to be fair, I believe Miracle Worker would be described as timeless.
I wish the remake of The Manchurian Candidate was better.
Isn't that one George Clooney?
And it's Denzel Washington.
Oh, is it?
Zoe Saldana in that too?
Maybe.
I never saw it.
What's his fucking name?
I was thinking of Munich. That's the one.
Oh,
that
Munich.
Has
I really like Munich.
George Clooney.
Yes. No, it was. I think it was Denzel Washington. I think Jerry O'Connell's in that movie, I think.
Oh, I'm out. He's rubbish.
That's fair. Oh, no, except for in Stand By Me.
Well, I'm saying
another movie where the kids were great.
That's true.
And some of them are dead.
Yes.
some
least,
of them are
at
Will
least
Wheaton.
One of them.
One of them, okay, but then some couple of them are as good as.
Wow.
I mean,
anyway, back on top.
The fact that Corey Feldman's still going is beyond belief.
Well, it's also beyond comprehension is no one's clamoring for it.
Yeah.
But another weird note about this is this like the town from Footloose, only instead of like rock music, it's facial hair?
I think that was the time.
That was the style. People didn't have facial hair back then.
Though you think
they were clean shaven.
You think of the South, you think of mustaches.
But you'd think because they're so poor.
Not
really,
really in the 30s.
Like really, like.
If they're so poor, you can't really
not
afford
really.
All these razor blades.
Well, you know what? The only time I noticed facial hair was in the trial. Both the prosecutor and Atticus started to have stubble in that scene.
Well, yeah, because they didn't have time. They were that was showing how haggard looking they were becoming because it was stressful.
This is like the remastering of this film is not great. Like I don't know if you saw like the yellowing of the film in parts of I watched it on Tubi.
Same.
So yeah, like there were parts, especially in that the trial scenes where like Atticus's suit was kind of yellowy at times.
You know what?
I was not paying that close of attention.
I couldn't tell because then again it was black and white. My TV tends to have issues with certain color palettes.
Yeah.
But. That's black and white, so no, I did not
see
that.
Yeah, it could use a little bit of remastering.
Yeah.
Well, it's Tubi. They probably didn't get, like, the best available transfer.
Well, I don't think it's been remastered in a while, though. Like, it probably is due for it.
Mm. What are you really going to get out of that?
I don't know. Less
There's
distracting
bits. Only so much remastering you can do with something that old.
Well, with the AI now, you can... recover some stuff.
Let's leave AI out of it.
Well, to be fair, that's where I'm okay. As long as we're not changing bits, as long as we're not changing lines and who's shooting first, then...
To be fair, Night of the Living Dead is as old as this movie.
Is it really?
It's either older, I can't remember if it's 63 or 66.
Wow.
But that movie used to look like absolute shit. And then they came out with that, the Criterion came out with the new one. And I'm like, oh my God, I did not think this movie could ever look this good.
Right.
And because I thought it was just bad transfer, bad, like, because they didn't, it was a very low budget movie.
Yeah.
So I wasn't expecting much.
I don't want the movie to be like better quality than when it first came out, but I want it to be of the quality from when it first came out. You know what I mean?
Well, yeah, there's a difference between. You know, on the big screen and then on a 4 or on a not even a 4:3, but a you know, mm-hmm. regular standard screen VHS copy, which sure. is basically it. Even early DVD was barely above
yeah,
a VHS.
And film degrades, so like depending on when it was digitized, like the quality is going to go down the more that film has been sitting. So yeah, I mean. That's about. We just really went off on a tangent about.
Yeah, stuff. I'm just letting you guys talk.
Oh yeah, that
other
start, that
notes.
Started about the facial hair.
Yeah, sorry. Yeah. Other notes.
I have no other notes.
I think we're favorite, down to our two things.
Favorite weirdo.
I guess I'll just go ahead and go first, and it's really just because I want to say it. Ham Scout.
Ham Scout.
That's fair. Just. Scout specifically in a ham.
Yeah.
That's
she
fair.
I never liked Scout more in this film than
that,
when she was
a
ham.
Fair enough. Amanda?
I mean, there weren't a ton of weirdos in this,
no,
but
it wasn't
guess,
a super weirdo-y movie.
I guess I'll go with Dildel.
Excuse me?
Dildel? We don't know if he was Dill or Dell.
It's Dill, but...
Dildel?
Calling him Dildel is a thing.
And all his teeth.
He's got some teeth. I am going...
He looks like a Powerpuff Girl character.
I like that there aren't a lot of weirdos in the movie.
He looks like the Mad Magazine kid.
Alfred E. Newman?
Yeah.
A bit, yeah. But with a side part.
Yeah.
Give the kid some alfalfa hair. Come on.
It's interesting that there aren't a lot of weirdos in this movie, but we've all gone with different ones, because I'm going with Syrup Boy.
Oh. I like how none of us picked the actual, like, weirdo.
Because it's almost like picking on special people.
A little bit.
Yeah, I do wish that at some point we could have figured out what Boo's deal was,
yeah.
like why he never came out of the house,
yeah.
like if he was... agoraphobic or like special needs or like if something had happened in the past and he had to retreat into the house, like
and,
I don't know.
And did he have some sort of like age disorder?
Yeah. Is he like Jack?
I hope not.
I mean, the father was fairly old, so the fact that Boo is like 30, I think that helps with the whole like legend of it. Like, it's been so long that even the parents are like, oh, yeah, he's da-da-da-da-da. If he was, like, a little kid, I don't think it would have... It would be so legendary.
I don't think he's a little kid, but it's jarring that he's a grown-ass man.
Well, it does make you think that maybe, again, no one's seen him in 20 years.
Exactly.
Like, he probably played high school football with Atticus.
I don't know if he's that old. Well, he looked like he was, like, late 20s to me. That's what I would have guessed.
I don't know. He's got Robert Duvall's hairline, so it's hard to say. Yeah. That's hard to say. All right. Scores, I'll go first since I had never seen this movie.
Mm-hmm.
As critical as I've been, I'm still giving this an 8.7.
Wow.
Root beer barrels.
8.7 root beer barrels. Oh, man. I didn't think of my candy. I never think of my candy until we get to
this
point.
See, I thought about it. And I'm like, root beer barrels are a little old-fashioned. And they're also...
They are old-fashioned.
I think of the South more when I think of root beer. And I don't know why. But I'm like, okay. Root beer barrels.
Right. Fine. I'm going to go with 7.6 sarsaparilla straws.
That's not a real candy.
It could be.
Well, I'm going to stay on theme with the candy. And I'm going to go... I'm going to go... With 8.2 pieces of whorehound.
What the fuck?
What?
You've never had whorehound?
Is that like a shipper rope?
Say it slowly.
Whorehound.
Okay,
It's H-O-R-E, hound, whorehound.
What the fuck is that?
That's a magazine.
So sometimes when you get it, it tastes like root beer, but the whorehound that I am familiar with almost tastes like sweet tea, like it's coated in powdered sugar. I learned about whorehound candy. If you've ever read Where the Red Fern Grows, he eats a lot of whorehound candy. And I had that.
Ham House.
Oh, gosh.
Ham Scout.
I like whorehound. It sounds weird to say. It's like a sometimes it's like a sarsaparilla flavor. Anyway.
Okay. It's a Dead Weather album.
Ooh, I like the Dead Weather.
So, yeah.
There we go.
Gorehound is the magazine.
Gorehound. Whorehound's a magazine for dogs.
It's only sold in the bougiest outdoor malls.
All right.
It's right there with two Bostons. And.
So who's picking the next movie?
Dave. I'm sure it'll be something lighthearted and fun.
Yes.
Well, first, I do believe we got a comment.
Did we?
On this? Oh, shit.
We're both shocked. You paid attention. I clearly didn't.
I am going to pull the comment up then. I am sorry.
Well, I was notified of the comment, not from there, but from the commenter.
Oh.
Let me...
Said, hey, they get my comment.
I commented.
Oh, sweet.
So I don't know what the comment is, per se.
I am finding out right now as I go to our Facebook page.
This is so professional.
Mm-hmm.
I am the most professional.
Way to be ready to give out them dig.
Well, usually Facebook, like, tells
you. I don't see
you.
Any comments.
Well, maybe it's on Apple?
I don't know,
on our podcast thing?
Was it a comment about the movie?
No, it was a suggestion.
Okay.
Oh, for a film?
Where did they post this suggestion?
Maybe, oh, no, you know what?
Did
it's in your email.
Email us?
Oh, is it in the...
The memoriam email.
I don't remember getting that email.
This is good.
It's just fantastic.
I already finished it. Oh, I didn't finish the beer yet. Sweet.
I'm gonna switch my laundry.
I also don't see it on here. I apologize to whoever sent us this comment. I am not seeing it. Did they send it?
Check your spam!
Did you send it to memoriamdevelopment@gmail.com or did you send it to info@memoriamdevelopment.com? Because I don't have access to that one off the top of myself.
Oh, good question.
So that might be.
I thought it was the Gmail one.
Well, if it's a Gmail one, I don't see it. Hmm. We do get a lot of spam in the Gmail one that I have to filter out, so it could be from that.
Okay.
I apologize.
Do not be disparaged. We will definitely get to that. Besides, I did want to make my pick.
Yes.
And funny you should talk about how American film was not... a lot of their visual inspiration came from Italy.
Yeah. Are we going Sergio Leone?
We are not going to go to Italy.
Okay.
We are going to be going to Switzerland by way of Rome.
What is this going to be like? The Seventh Seal or something?
Gladiator.
Actually, you're not far off.
Like what's his name? Ingrid Bergman?
No.
Not Ingrid.
How about you just tell us?
Well, no, I want to see Nick flail some more.
No, I love flailing. It's fun. No, please tell us.
It's definitely not Ingmar Bergman.
Thank you. I do know the difference between Ingmar and Ingrid.
Or Candace Bergen.
Or her father that had the puppets.
No, we are going to Dario Argento's classic Suspiria.
Nice.
Oh, I haven't seen the OG Suspiria. I've only seen the remake, and I really liked it.
I've seen neither, but I'm excited about it.
Well, I decided to go from the color palette we just left, which is none, to the most color
to a lot.
Ever.
Full-on Technicolor?
Yeah.
Nice.
Cool.
And if you're a whorehound... I mean, Gorehound.
Oh, jeez.
You're going to love it.
Yeah.
Or you'll hate it and you'll be like, why did we bother with this? The story makes no sense.
Oh, God. Is it going to be like David Lynch?
No, there's a narrative.
Okay.
Is the remake
It doesn't
like,
have to
comparable?
Be a good narrative. To be fair, the remake is probably needlessly complicated.
Interesting.
I mean, and I understood it, so.
But I mean, just needlessly convoluted. To be fair, when I was like, nobody could
that's
possibly...
That's the whorehound that I grew up eating in okay. that particular package. That's what it looks
Do
like.
Do you all see that?
I mean, it's like a
I'm
ginger...
I'm showing you guys.
It's like a sugary ginger candy.
It's not ginger flavored,
No, but
yeah.
I mean, it's one of those
I've seen that brand. Like, they make a bunch of old-fashioned
They
candies.
Do, yeah. And that's... Yeah.
So, Suspiria, the original Suspiria is...
1977, we are not going 2017.
Right. I figured.
It's... I mean, we can get there eventually, but it's a...
Like I said, I really liked the remake, so sure I won't dislike the original.
To be fair, I wouldn't... The remake has a lot of extra story, which I'd like. It's a different take, and I think it, in its own way, is also a very horribly gorgeous movie, and it's very much in the spirit of the original. Is it the same? I don't feel like there's a lot of common ground.
It's the same basic plot, right, though? She goes to the dance academy and, like, crazy shit starts happening.
But
there's demons.
But
spoilers.
I won't say equally as good as soundtracks, but both very good soundtracks and very different soundtracks. You've got Goblin versus Tom York. It's a very strange dichotomy.
No Ted Nugent?
No, you got to watch a Rob Zombie movie probably for that.
Dario Argento has definitely a distinct style too, so it'll be interesting.
You think Rob Zombie would use his own music?
He does. But he also likes all that hillbilly shit.
That's fair. So we'll be listening to, or we'll be watching Suspiria next.
If you're just listening to Suspiria, you're missing the whole fucking movie.
That's kind of awesome.
I mean, to be fair, the soundtrack is great.
You just said that, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I mean... Fucking great.
The next episode you're going to listen to will be about Suspiria. It's kind of where I got stuck there. Before we go, there's a couple things that you should know. We do have a poll on our Facebook page, Films Like the First Time, where you can vote on which film that none of us has seen we will watch first. The first one to get 10 votes will win. We have not gotten to 10 votes yet. The options are Akira, Gone with the Wind, Midnight Cowboy, Plan 9 from Outer Space, Harold and Maude, and Brokeback Mountain.
Plan 9 is in the lead right now,
isn't
it?
We've got a tie between Gone with the Wind, which is considered one of the greatest films of all time, and Plan 9 from Outer Space,
which is considered
the worst film of all time.
I mean, I don't think it's a secret what I'm rooting for here.
Probably Plan 9 would be my guess.
Hell yeah.
I'm open to any of these, but you can vote. We will go with the winner. And watch that as kind of a special episode where we don't select. We also are in the works with talking to a couple of people that might be guests on a special episode where it's a film that we've all seen other than them.
Mm-hmm.
So that might be coming up soon as well. Also, check out our Facebook page. Give us a like there. Like and review us on iTunes. If you want to, you can email us. I might see it at memoriamdevelopment@gmail.com or message us on our Facebook page, Films Like the First Time. But thank you so much for listening. I am Nick.
I am Amanda.
I'm still Dave.
Bye.
I'm still Dave.
Memoriam Development.